No matter how dark the night is, the sun always rises. No matter how hard life gets, keep moving forward. You never know what amazing things are waiting just around the corner. No story is too rough and no journey is too tough. Join us on Stretch Street to be inspired by the stories of people who have been through it all and come out stronger. Stretch Street Podcast. Stretching without snapping.
Hello and welcome to another episode on the Stretch Street Podcast. This is the energetic EJ and you know what I'm going to say next, right? I am super delighted to be here today. And, okay, so the preparation to this one was like, oh my God, am I going to be able to meet up? Well, because my guest today is somebody who is so huge on podcasting, on Twitter, well, X now, and it is such a privilege to be hosting him on the show today. And so I saw myself like dreaming about it. Oh my God, I hope I'm going to be able to impress him. And I'm like, hey girl, you're not supposed to impress anyone, just be yourself. But anyways, I think these things happen, especially when, you know, you get like a rare privilege. Because how did I even get to meet my guest? I met him on a space and he shared a lot, and then I got to get on the stage on the same space with him, and I shot my shots, right? I wasn't even sure I was gonna get a yes, but I did get a yes, and I'm like, oh my God, I did get a yes. What am I going to do now? It's taken me a couple of weeks to prepare for this. Hopefully, I'm able to nail this. But yes, today on the show, I have Clint Murphy, the host of the Growth Guy podcast. Now, anyways, we're going to get into all of that and the little bit I was able to snoop around to get, and we're going to be getting into the story of Clint Murphy. He's grown from zero to this, especially on socials. He was an accountant. He was doing quite well in one of the big fours. But then he pivoted into this space. And he started to grow in this space, and he's grown so tremendously. I mean, he has about 350,000 followers on X, right? And that is not counting LinkedIn and his newsletters, which is over 10,000 subscribers and growing, right? And so he's done a lot. And I'm also intrigued and inspired that he works with his family. His wife handles the LinkedIn page, and you know, and it's just like, oh my God, this is like, wow, this is interesting. And guys, you should get to, you know, visit his page on X and check out his pinned post. My goodness, that pinned post is a resource, is a course on its own. Like, you need to actually study it to be able to get the type of result that he got. But it is interesting to see that he was able to share that, and anyone could actually go follow that, you know, same step to get amazing content out. And I am going to ask him a lot about that post and other posts that he's made already as well, right? So today, again, you know how we do it on the Stretch Street podcast. We share stretch stories to remind you that challenges are not exclusive to any of us. We all go through them. But when we assume the posture of learning to ask the question, what is this challenge here to teach me? Then we're able to go through the challenge, learn the lessons, and those lessons that we learn makes us better because it adds value to us as well as to other people that are around us. So we want to learn some more from Clint Murphy today to find out who is Clint, what makes him tick, and what are some challenges that he's been through, but most importantly, what are the life lessons that he has learned from those seasons of stretch? All right. Once again, you're welcome to the Stretch Street Podcast. If you are here for the first time, welcome. Please do hit the subscribe button and turn on notification if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you're listening on any of the podcasting platform, please find the button that says rate or give feedback or subscribe, whichever button you see there on any of the platform you use. please do give us a rating, give us a follow, send us feedback. You can send to me at via email on stretchstreetpod@gmail.com. And let's get talking, all right? And please, from this particular episode, let me know what jumped at you the most, what nuggets hit you the most, you know, what wisdom from Murphy hits you the most. And, you know, let's have that conversation after now. Welcome to the show, Clint. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. Very excited to join you, and your energy is infectious. So I see why you go by Energetic EJ. This makes a lot of sense joining you on the show and seeing the energy at work. Let's do it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. You know, just before we turned on the camera, I was saying to you, like, I find you a little bit intimidating, right? Like, you're such a voracious learner, and you give a lot of value in all your expressions online, right? And, you know, it was just a lot of like, oh my God, I need to impress this dude. But I had to remind myself, like, no, that's not why we're here. You're not here to impress. You're just here to do your job and dig as much as you can out of him. So I was going to ask you the question, like, do you ever get that feedback from others? Like, you're a little bit intimidated. And if you did, how did that make you feel? Or how do you respond to that?
It's always interesting in that. And I heard the best line on this a year or two ago. And it was, for a lot of people out there, when someone tells them, if someone says to you, EJ, you're intimidating, the line you get to use back is, whoa, I'm not intimidating, you're intimidated. And those are two different things, because generally, a lot of people will look at someone and say, you're intimidating, but then the question is, well, what is it? Is it the knowledge you're sharing? Is it the confidence you're saying it with? Is it the energy you're bringing? Is it the confidence and the strength in yourself? And so when someone says you're intimidating to you, you say, in a way, well, I'm glad you're having that reaction, because that means I am standing firm in my energy. I'm being confident. I'm being powerful. And that's how we all want to show up in our workplace. And at work, I often will say to colleagues, make sure to question me, because I will say something with 100% confidence, even when I'm only 40% confident. And part of that is, as you go through your career, when you don't speak with that confidence, you get picked apart a little. You don't get up for that promotion. You don't get that next opportunity. So you learn to bury the unsure aspect of yourself or the imposter, and just always speak with that energy of groundedness, of centeredness, of confidence. And so you can see, if you're always speaking in that way, someone on the other side is going to say, well, hey, that feels a little intimidating to me if I haven't learned to do that myself yet.
I absolutely love that response. I love it. And I mean, isn't that what we're all, you know, gunning for, to come off as confident? And, you know, I mean, a fantastic answer, by the way. All right. So some trivia questions for you. Like, if you were to give us one liner as to what you do, how would you describe it?
I get shit done.
I was waiting for that. That's exactly what.
Whatever the shit is that needs to get done is what I get done. Yeah.
And you help others get shit done as well.
I help others build their get shit done muscle. That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you say you help others get shit done, get things that nobody else would, you know, get done, what does that mean? Can you unpack that for us a little bit?
Yeah, the biggest realization for me in life is that I like to help people grow personally, professionally, and financially. And I'll borrow from Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People in the concept of beginning with the end in mind. So I realized about 13 years ago, 14 years ago, maybe even 15, that I was the type of person who got shit done in my mind. So I'd do a marathon in my mind. I'd do an Ironman in my mind. I'd read about it and say, I could do that. I'd read about someone being a millionaire and say, I could do that. But I wasn't doing these things in real life. And so getting shit done is not doing shit in your head and daydreaming about it. It's actually going from a dreamer to a doer, from someone who thinks about it to someone who does it. And so the biggest change, I think, in my life was when I started to actually do that. When I said, I'm out of shape, couch potato, not achieving a lot, to I'm going to do an Ironman. And then over the course of the next 2 years, working backwards to, well, I got to sign up for swim class because I'm afraid of the water. I have to buy a new pair of running shoes. I have to get my bike tuned up. That level of basicness to completing an Ironman 2 years later. And then one of the things you realize, EJ, is when you take these hard physical challenges, like running an ultra marathon, they're physical, but they're doing more than that. They're teaching you, you're the type of person who can set a pretty big, bold, audacious goal, break it back to what you need to do every day, show up and do it, and then get there. And once you do that with a running, when you do it with cycling, when you do it with almost anything physical, you teach yourself, well, wait, I can do that with my career. I can do that with my finances. I can do that with money. And so that is what I try to teach people and try to write about is, hey, you can have a pretty crazy, audacious goal on the horizon. And all you have to do is break it all the way back to what do I need to do every single day so that over the course of time, I'll get to where I want to go. And that might be over 10 years. But if I do it every single day, as Dwayne Johnson says, the rent's due every day, pay the rent. If you pay the rent, you're going to get there.
Fantastic. I love it. And that kind of reminds me of one of the posts and short videos you shared on X, when you talked about thinking in decades and not in days, knowing that when you think in decade, it's like, it's a given. You are, if you stay consistent about looking at it like this is a long-term journey, yes, at some point you might plateau and feel like nothing is happening, but then boom, it goes up. And, you know, and that's when they say, oh, where are you? It happened overnight. But actually, it was consistently putting in the work daily that got you to that place. So fantastic answer right there. Can I ask you, what is your philosophy about life?
My philosophy about life is interesting. So, you know, more and more I think about it a little bit like the Matrix. And I've had some good conversations with some other creators online. And one of my favorite creators and I dove deep on this one. And we felt that a lot of people in our situation are able to get where we are because we have this same mindset. And what I'll refer to it as is a video game or a matrix mindset. And what I mean by that is life is like a matrix, or it's like a video game. There's set rules. Society's wired a certain way. If you do this, 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 and this, certain things will happen. You're in charge of the remote control. So if you imagine yourself like a Sims character, you choose when you wake up. You choose the food that goes in your body. You choose whether you're going to walk, whether you're going to exercise, whether you're going to read a book, whether you're going to take a class, whether you're going to take a course, whether you're going to hire a coach. All of those are your choices. And the results of those choices are what determine your life. And so the way I look at it is I boil life down to three key things. Know what you want, understand what it takes, and you're not going to be surprised by the third one. Do the work. Day in, day out. And when you take a video game mindset or a matrix mindset and you apply those three things, you can achieve anything you want on this planet. Now, I'll draw a little bit of a line, like I'm not going to be a NASA astronaut, that's not happening. But can I become a millionaire? Yes. Can you become a multimillionaire? Yes. Can you get to billionaire? If you got enough time and you want it, and that's what you want? Yes. It's all achievable. If you work backwards, say, what's the plan that I need to achieve it? And then work backwards and put in the reps over a long enough period of time, you're going to get there. So that's my philosophy, is I'll call it the matrix mindset.
Mindset. Fantastic. Now, when you say know what you want, understand what it takes to get it, and then go ahead and do what it takes to get it. In these three lines, as a coach yourself, what have you seen or what have you observed from, you know, your coaching clients and generally that is the biggest where people get it missing? Is it at the point of knowing, the point of understanding, or doing?
It's all three. So if we take a step back, the first one is, I mean, it's really like, what's my mission? What's my purpose? And for a couple of years, I was in men's group and working with a lot of young men. And one of the biggest problems in EJ, you probably see this in young men, or in a lot of women, I'll see it in the dating world. A lot of men are still boys. Like they don't have a vision, right? There's no vision for their life. There's no mission. Like, why am I here? What am I driving for? There's no purpose. Like, what's my why? They don't know. Like, they're lost. Maybe it was dad didn't teach them. Maybe school let them down. But there's been no initiation or rite of passage that's allowed them to step into their power to say, this is why I'm here. This is what I want. And this is where I'm going to go. So that's the know what you want. And so many of them are missing that. And there's an old quote that I love, you know, a man without a purpose is like a ship lost at sea. They're just rudderless. Like, they're kind of nihilist, floating through life. And then you have this whole movement where they get on these forums and just complain to each other. So we need easiest way to get them out of that. Help them find their purpose. Help them find a mission, right? And then you go to understand what it takes. And I had a guest a long time ago, he had a beautiful line, a crap map is better than no map. And that stuck with me forever, right? Like, just so poetic. And the idea is, like, if you don't know where you're going, you're not going to get there. And if you have a rough idea, even if it's just a North Star, you can move in that direction. And so once you figure out what you want, we can start to move in that direction. And there's so much information out there today. There's almost 100% chance, whatever it is that you decide on the know what you want, there's someone who's done it. And if there's not someone who's done it, there's someone who's done close to it. There's going to be biographies about them. There's going to be like a documentary about them. There's going to be a Wikipedia page about them. There's going to be articles written about them. Someone's probably written a Twitter thread about them. So just go find that information, find their path, and be like, I'll copy their path. Like, life's easy. So in general, 80% of the time or more, there's going to be someone who's done what you want or done something comparable. Find out what they did, how they did it. With today's day and age, often you can reach out and ask them, like, hey, how did you do that? How did you make that much money? How did you build that business? Here's my situation. What do you recommend I do? So that's number two. And then number three, like, imagine, okay, well, now you got a purpose. Okay, now you know what you want to do. Yeah. Now you have a plan. Great. Fuck. Now you just got to show up and do the work, EJ. And I don't know about you, but there's a lot of people that don't want to show up and do the work. I have a job and I don't have time after my job. It's like, well, what are you talking about? Like, of course you do. Like, I'm still a CFO by day. So by day, I'm a CFO of a real estate development company. What you see on Twitter, what you see with the newsletter, what you see with the podcast, that's at night and on the weekends. So it's, you know, like, I'm 45, I'm pretty old. If I've got the energy to do that, like, and you're 20 and you're telling me you don't have gas in the tank to, like, build your dream life at night and on the weekends, you're basically saying, I just want to party and have fun. And that's fine. That's fine. Power to you. That's your choice. But if we go back to the matrix mindset and say the outcome we want is within our grasp, if we make the choices we need to make to get there, I always look at it and I say, hey, we've got a graph. We've got everything we want on the one axis. We've got everything we have to do to get there on the other axis. And if you're not willing to do what it takes to get what you want, we got two ways we can go about it. You can be whiny and be like, oh, I didn't get it. Well, Well, you didn't do the work. Or you can say, hey, I'm not willing to do as much as I wanted, so I'm not going to get my goal, but I'll be happy with less. Okay. So if, in other words, you reconcile yourself between the effort you're willing to put in and the output that you'll get for that action. And so you have two choices. You either reconcile yourself to it, maybe three choices. Do the work, number one, and ideally get to where you want. Don't do the work and reconcile yourself where you're going to land, or don't do the work and whine about it. And I think too many people land in bucket three.
That's number three. Wow. I love it. I love it. You're such a great teacher, by the way.
Thank you.
You know how to explain. I love it. And it comes forth in when you're speaking and especially when you write. And I'm going to get to that in a bit. But one final trivia question for you is, what is one fun thing about you that most people don't know?
Oh, that most people don't know. So I think most people don't know. A fair number of people, I've wrote about it a couple times. Over the last decade, I wrote a fantasy novel with my sister. So we're writing a fantasy novel series. We finished book one 2 years ago and we haven't got an agent yet. So I feel like a total loser because, you know what you want. Like, I want to get it published. So I should be doing the work to get that. But I'm not, because partially because I started this whole podcast, Twitter thing and put that on the side burner. I have to bring it back to the front. So that's going to happen over the next 6 months. And then I have to start writing book two with her. And so what I love is the world that we're creating together. Most of the creation is mine, and I'll do like a rough draft of the chapter, but then she puts her stamp on it and it's magical. She is such a gifted, beautiful writer. I can't even imagine touching the poetry that are her words when they go on a page. It's just,
oh,
it's,
wow.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's such a fun project to do together. Yeah.
Now we can't wait to get into this fictional work. Oh, it's a fantasy. Woo!
Yeah, fantasy.
We can't wait to get into that world with you guys. Okay, fantastic. First of all, I wanted to start with your podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's called The Growth Guide, right?
That's right.
But it was initially The Pursuit of Learning, of Learning podcast. But you rebranded early this year, right?
Yeah.
What informed the change of name? Into The Growth Guide, because I think there's a correlation, but yeah, what inspired the change?
So what it was, and you know what's really interesting, we talk about writing things down, we talk about know what you want, understand what it takes, is I created a roadmap for my life roughly 2020 of where I want it to be by 2028. Now I'll say 2025. We've cut about 3 years off of the process just by doing it every day. And in my values section, the number one value was learning and growth. And I never even looked, you know, I create it and I reference it maybe once in a year, but I never put two and two together that the two names that I've had for the podcast were the number one value that I had on that page. And when I noticed that, I was like, oh, wow. So something is working, like it's tying to my number one value, learning and growth. And what it was the pursuit of learning. There's a lot of syllables there and it's a little bit too much. And part of what I wanted was I wanted a website that matched the podcast. I wanted a name for a podcast and I wanted a name for the newsletter and I wanted that to all tie together. And so I was able to buy the website, thegrowth.guide. So there's no .com, it's just the growth.guide. And I was like, oh, the growth guide. Like, wait a second, the growth guide newsletter, the growth guide podcast. I like it. I want to help a billion people grow personally, professionally, financially. I can be the growth guide. That can be my thing. And so we went through a branding exercise, hired an agency to build the website, build out the brand. And once I threw that one out at my wife and at them, they were like, yeah, we kind of like that. You know, created the logo. It was interesting. I was in my sauna and I was like, sort of meditating on a logo and I landed on something, and what they presented the next week was almost exact. It was so close. It blew my mind. So it was there was just so much synchronicity there that, and it's three syllables, right? The Growth Guide versus, oh, hey, what's your podcast? The Pursuit of Learning. It's like The Growth Guide. It's just quicker, just snappier.
Love it, love it. You know, I mean, when I started mine too, it was something else, and I just also rebranded. But I mean, the names were pretty short, but it was just more about the concept and the message behind it that made me just rebrand it, because the other one was seeming like it was giving off a different feel. It was called the Afrocentrics Podcast. But then once you hear that, you think Africa, you know. And at the time, I wasn't digging deep into that as a person. I was more I was more open to, you know, other nationalities. And for me, it was more about the stories. I just, there's just something about learning from people's stories. And, you know, that's why I'm like, okay, life is a stretch. And we are on the street of life. So we need to just learn from it. So
I like that.
Street podcast.
And it's very similar, right? Because you've got the S's. I got the G's. You got the S's.
I got the S's. Okay. Oh, wow. I have something in common. Okay.
Alliteration.
That's amazing. Now, I read your profile. I read your story, you know, on your website. By the way, they did an awesome job with your website. I was going to ask, like, did you do that yourself? But you had an agency. Kudos to them. That was so fantastic. It was simple, but really, really like straight, spot on, straight on point. And it's just so wonderful too. I mean, I could stay there for the longest time. And I love, love, love. You are such a great storyteller as well, by the way.
Thank you.
I love how you come off with your statement and how you want. It's so clear what anybody who wants to work with you, who wants to work with you, what they should expect. And it's just beautiful to see. Now, in that, you told a little story about, you know, you you got married to your high school sweetheart.
Yeah. So we've been dating. September will be 28 years.
Wow. 28?
28 years, yeah.
Like, what, I mean, honestly, that kind of, that gives anyone an idea of the kind of person you are, looking at when you, I feel like, because again, you said initially, like, you weren't serious with school, and even though she came into your life, you still weren't serious until, you know, you got into college and you were able to pick up again. But it kind of tells me the kind of person you are, saying that when you set your mind to a thing, you focus on it and you see it through, right? So in that journey so far, basically, I mean, that's been a long time, you know, to be one person and grow with them and your two, you know, boys already. What are some challenges in that area of relationship, you know, that you faced, and how have you been able to, what lessons have you learned that you can share with our listeners?
Well, the biggest one would be, I mean, there was a period of time, a few years, where it got really rough. And I was ready to kind of call it a day. I may have said to her, you know, I give up, like, I'm done. And she said, I'll never stop fighting for us. And I made a decision that night. Okay, if you're never going to stop fighting, then I won't either. And one of the realizations I had was, this is about me. This isn't about you. And I need to do the work on myself. There's a saying that you have in a relationship. You're 50% responsible for your side of the relationship, but you're 100% responsible for your 50%. And that was maybe a piece that was missing, was, hey, I'm half responsible for this relationship, but I have to be 100% responsible for my half. And that's when I joined the men's group. Was I realized, hey, there's something wrong with me. I'm raising two boys. There's no real clear definition nowadays. What does it mean to be a man? And so I joined the men's group, and I still remember the day our leader at the time, Jason, he doesn't even remember saying this to me, but there were certain exercises you would do where, for example, you would stare another guy in the eyes and you would just practice just holding your ground, if you will. And I would always giggle. Because I just, like, I'd grown up pretty rough and tough life, and it felt like the guys were like, it was an exercise to teach them how to be intimidating. And I was like, but you're all so far from it. Like, this is almost comical. So I would giggle. And I was like, hey, like, why when we do this exercise, do I always have the urge to laugh? And his reply right away was, maybe you don't take yourself serious enough. And maybe other people don't either. And I was like, oh, like, gut punch. And I remember going to work the next day and asking some of the people that worked for me, like, do you guys take me seriously? Does the team take me seriously? Like, what's going on here? You know, like my wife, like, do you take me seriously? And, but I made a decision. So I joined the group, but I hadn't dove in. And when he said that, I went to the reading list for the group and I read every book on the list. And one of the books I read was No More Mr. Nice Guy. And so for those who are listening, you hear about men who are a nice guy, but it doesn't mean don't be nice. What it means is there's a persona called the nice guy. And the nice guy puts everyone ahead of them, puts everyone's needs ahead of their own. They're kind of a doormat and they don't stand their ground. They don't have their personal values. They don't have boundaries. They don't say these are my firm hills that I'll die on. They don't say to their partner, hey, here's the things that are important for me. Like, I'm going to hockey on Wednesdays. I'm playing soccer on Thursdays. Like, it doesn't mean you have to be an a-hole to your partner, but it's like, hey, here are my terms and conditions. What are your terms and conditions? Because we have to have our alone time, our together time, our separate time. We have to be able to live a life independent of each other and be strong together. And so reading all those books, doing all, you know, we call it the work, right? Doing the work and becoming a better man made me a better husband and allowed her to be a better wife and allowed me to be a better father. And so I would say that was like almost going through losing each other, getting to the cliff, and then walking our way back, and then being willing to do the work to not only get away from the cliff, but, you know, get down the cliff, down the stairs, and onto the beautiful sunny beach. That took the last, you know, that took 2 years of work. Somewhere in there we hit COVID. And then I would say we hit COVID at exactly the right time for our family. We were doing the work. We were through most of it, half of it. And then we, our house finished getting built right like 2 months before COVID. So the last 3.5, 4 years, for a lot of people, they were bad. For us, it was probably the best 4 years of our lives. Yeah. Oh my
God. I love it. And I asked you that question because I know, like you said earlier on about men, it's just, it's a little bit heartbreaking to see that, you know, a lot of men are not stepping into their power and into their position. And I mean, some people just hang on to the position, but leave the responsibility behind. And that's what is affecting a lot of relationship. And I just had to ask that because I know that, I mean, you are this person who we know to be like the go, go, go person. And so if you're making it work in your business and in your career, and you're making it work at home, there's something you must be doing right that we need to learn from, which is why I asked. I also know that you work with your wife on your project. Yeah. How is working with her like? I mean, I don't see a lot of people, I think some people do, but sometimes like it's the worst. Some would tell you like it's the worst thing, like, no, there's gonna be friction, because then, you know, it's 100%. Like, well, how is that for you?
It's only been 9 months. Ish. I always use the word we. You'll hear me use that a lot when I talk about creation, when I talk about my podcast, when I talk about the journey. And that's because, you know, if we rewind the clock, we've been together 28 years, probably at the 3 or 4 year mark. Her parents immigrated to Canada from Hong Kong, and they ran a restaurant in the city we were in. We grew up in a very small city, hour and a half outside of Vancouver. And not many Asian people in that city at all. Most of the Asian people that lived there, their families ran a business. Her family was no exception. They ran one of the local Chinese food restaurants. And it meant her mom and dad worked like 12 hours a day for the first few years, 7 days a week. And then eventually they went down to 6 days a week. But that meant from kindergarten till grade 12, she would wake up, make herself lunch, walk to school or take the bus, come home from school, do her homework, and then probably by 11, go into the family restaurant and work. And it meant she almost never saw her parents. And so she said to us very early in this relationship, when we have kids, I am going to be home with our kids and you can work and make us money. And so she's always, you know, I can't do what I do without the support of her as a teammate. And for most of that time, not only was she like being the mom and taking care of the house, she was still working, right? She was still making good money by almost any conventional standard. And so that was a lot. And for her to do that, I mean, she did that. Our oldest is 15. So she did that for 14 and a half years. And so about a year ago, I received a pretty good promotion at work and in salary, not change in role, but in salary. And I looked at her. I was doing all the creation on my own, the podcast, the Twitter, and I was burning out, EJ. Like I was hitting the wall hard. And we were driving down to Seattle as a family for a long weekend, a couple nice dinners, do some shopping. And I remember looking at her and I said, like, I was just doing the mental math. Hey, I just got this raise. I got this much money. This is your salary. I feel like I'm dying. And I just threw out, like, I think you should quit your job. And she looked at me and said, like, well, what do you mean? And I just walked her through all that. I'm like, well, we're already living a pretty darn good life. And so we don't really, like, we don't need the raise. And it's roughly your salary. Like, why don't we just wash those two against each other? And you start helping me so I can sleep again. Like I was getting up at, you know, 5 something in the morning. I was going to bed at like 12:30, 1 at night. Like it wasn't sustainable. And so she thought about it. I got the boys to put in some good arguments for her, you know, like, hey, like you'll be able to help me with my school and hey, you can help me with my sports. And it's like, good job, boys. And so within a month, she was like, yeah, I think you're right. So she gave notice. And over the next 5 or 6 months, she finished some projects she was working on, did some consulting and left them in a good spot. And probably I'd say April or May this year, it became full time. And so she runs our LinkedIn. She runs our Instagram. She helps manage the newsletter. She does a lot with the podcast. And what we're doing now, she's about to onboard a teammate, remote work, who will be our first growth guide, new colleague. And so that'll take a lot of the work off her plate, which means she'll be able to take a bunch of the stuff off my plate and she'll be able to focus on high level strategic things and help me build what's effectively becoming the business behind the scenes. And so it's really going to take a major step forward over the next 6 to 12 months.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. I'm just wondering here, like, why didn't you look outside? Why did you look within for the support you needed?
Part of it was financial. Part of it was saying, hey, I don't know if I want to pay someone. There's something mental there. Now, there are times along the way where we may have gotten fights and arguments and it's like, well, hey, if you don't want to do this, like go do whatever you want to do and I'll just hire someone, like whatever, like let's not fight about it. And there's a joy, especially as I move towards retirement myself, or not retirement, but pivoting. Like I want to be able to come into the home office and sit beside each other and work and just like bang ideas off each other. and then be like, hey, you want to put, you know, we did our 4-hour block. You know, they talk about your 4-hour deep focus block. We did our 4-hour deep focus block. You want to go for a walk together, take the dog for a walk, grab lunch together, and play some pickleball, and then jump back in and do another deep block of work. And there's like, I've spent of the 28 years together, I mean, 25 of them have been long hours, hard work, stressful job. And even though we've been together, a lot of those years barely saw each other. And so part of me wants to like, hey, our kids are getting older. Like, let's reconnect. Let's spend absolutely that time together.
When they're out, it's just going to be two of you.
Yeah. And how many relationships do you know when the kids get out of school, mom and dad break up because they're like, I don't even know who you are anymore. Like, all I was focused on for the last 20 years was our kids. I never thought about you. I never thought about our life after the kids. I don't even know if I like you anymore. So it's like, well, let's make sure we're not that couple. Let's rekindle the romance, the love, and the mission. And let's have a joint mission. And let's say, here's where we're going together. And so that's one of the main reasons not to look outside. And I didn't want her to have to work anymore. Like, yes, of course, she's working on this, but it's like, she creates the hours. She does it when she wants. It's like, okay, I know what I've got to do during the day. Like, she'll take the boys to camp. She'll like, she has some girlfriends now, or she'll go play pickleball, or they'll go for a run, and like, she'll lunch with her friend. And then it's like, okay, now I got to write a post. So she has control. It's putting the control back into her hands. And I wanted her to have the control. I wanted her to be able to say, hey, I want to work out. I want to build friendships. I want to be able to invest in my life. Most of our investments have been in my life. So I wanted her to be able to build the life she wants.
I love it. Honestly, like, this is giving me a lot of joy as just listening to you. Thank you so much, Clint. I don't know that, you know, there's been a lot of digging into your personal life like this, but I just saw you as somebody who, beyond the content, beyond, you know, I think like behind the scenes, you are as great a person as you are on the outside. And I needed to dig into that. Just quickly, as we round this off, what are some like major, it could be just one major setback you've had on your journey to pivoting and then, you know, growing this business that is like booming right now and hopefully is going to get bigger. What is one challenge that you faced? And what lesson, are you able to navigate it? And what lesson did you draw from that?
Yeah, knock on wood, I haven't had many on this pivot yet. Where I would say I'll throw one at you, there's at least three major ones in the last 15 years that have really shaped my life. One of them we did talk about. It was what happened with the rough time with my wife. And the other thing that came out of that one was not only did I do the men's groups, but I also spent time in the space of shadow work. If I don't know if any of your listeners do much with shadow work, but the concept of shadow work is we have subconscious hardwiring. And so this has really informed my philosophy. When you said, what's your philosophy on life? I talked about the matrix mindset. As part of the matrix mindset, the other thing that I really believe is we're all basically biological computers. So we're a computer with a skin suit on top of it. And when we look at that, there's three things I think are really important for people. One is our hardware, two is our software, and three is our operating systems. And so the three major setbacks I've had over the last 15 years, one helped me improve my operating systems. And we talked about that. That was 15 years ago, being an out of shape couch potato who did shit in his head. I learned how to change my operating systems and become a person who actually did things in real life. So I learned how to improve my habits, begin with the end in mind. That's operating systems. On the hardware side, when I was having those challenges with my wife, I did a lot of shadow work. And what shadow work, Carl Jung has a quote that says, until we make the subconscious conscious, we will forever be led by it and call it fate. So if you have girlfriends who always date a specific type of guy and he's a total D-bag and you're like, how does she not see he's a D-bag? Like, odds are he's like the exact same as her dad was growing up. Like, she doesn't know why she's attracted to that type of guy, but it has something to do with her childhood. And it was hardwired into her and she just doesn't know, right? For most of my life, I was killing myself in work, in physical pursuits, all to have my dad say, I'm proud of you. But I didn't know that. The 12-year-old little boy wanted to hear his dad say he was proud of him. And he was buried in my mind and I didn't know him. That's the hardware. So the hardware is psychoanalysis with a therapist, or it's shadow work, where you get at what is it that's driving me to behave the way I do as an adult? What coping mechanisms have I developed that won't serve me? And so what are the consistent patterns that you engage in that don't serve you in life? And how can you learn to change that hardware? So that's the hardware. And then the last one, a major setback at about 35, right before this job, I effectively was fired from my prior job. Now, we kind of worded it as we're going to mutually choose to part ways. But when I went back and said, hey, I'm really rethinking that, I probably should stay here. You know, my wife's pregnant with a second kid and I've got a mortgage I have to close on. And they said, that's not an option. It was like, you guys fired me. Wow, that hurts. So the big realization there was I'd met with an industrial psychologist and they recommended about 8 to 10 books to read. One of those books was Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy by Dr. Burns. And it had a concept in it called thought auditing, which is based on cognitive behavioral therapy. And the idea being, we have a voice in our head. We have probably anywhere from 35,000 to 90,000 thoughts a day, depending on what you read. So let's just say 60,000, go kind of in the middle. 80% plus of those thoughts are negative and they're on a recurring thought loop, right? Like if you actually pause and listen to what your mind says, it's almost never good. It's almost never positive. Someone says something to you, you don't think about what they said. You think about what you think about what they said. And you think they said something negative most of the time. And so what thought auditing does is it says, well, write that down on a piece of paper. And on the other side of the paper, write down more logical thoughts, 3 to 4. Come back 10 minutes later, look at the first thought, look at the logical thoughts, and start to evaluate your thought process. Like, are the original thoughts reasonable or are they not? And so step one is you have to be able to start to actually notice those thoughts. So notice the thoughts. Step two is question them. Step three is only permit them if they're right? If they're serving you. And that stems back from Stoicism. So this is 2,000 plus year old philosophy. And so Stoicism and Buddhism have become very central to how I approached life. And that was a major setback that I was able to overcome by reading that book. So in the last 12 to 15 years, I've worked on upgrading my hardware, improving my software, and implementing better operating systems. And when you do those three things, I'm a much better computer today than I was 15 years ago. And so over the last 3 years, I haven't had, other than like the burnout from doing too much, I haven't had too many roadblocks yet. I mean, probably, and I don't, you know, I don't even know whether I should share this one out loud. I don't think work's too necessarily happy with the direction this is all going. It's maybe getting a little too big, EJ, and they're kind of looking at it and saying, whoa, this is a little too much. You know, maybe you should rein it back a little. But once the train gets rolling, you don't put it back in the train yard. You kind of just keep letting it go. Yeah.
Wow. You are such a ball. And and a moving train of value. And how often, like, how many books do you read in, like what's the number of books you read in a month? Because you seem to like be so big on reading.
Right now it's 4. So I read a book in a month. Week. Yeah, I read a book every week because my podcast, I interview authors. So every week I have not every week, right? Like some weeks I might interview 4 and then I don't have any for 2 weeks. But on average, I interview.
Completely, or you just scan through to get the idea of it?
I'd say 95%. So pretty completely. And then I try to stick some, I'm getting better at putting notes into Obsidian. So I'm kind of using it to build a second brain. And so have a conversation with an author on average every week, which means a book every week. And now what I'm trying to do is I bought like a dozen books on copywriting. So I'm going to try to read those in between reading the ones for the authors. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know.
And you still work.
Yeah. Yeah. And still work. And so, one a week.
Fantastic. Wow. Okay. Last question for you. Your content on Twitter, on X, how long does it take you to build one? Because like, especially some, because I saw, you know, the one on your pinned tweet, and there's one I saw recently, where you, a couple, there's, you know, I love the way you arrange it and the way it feels like you put a lot of research into it, talking about, oh, this 10 books are going to change your lives. And then you then break it down, like, what are you going to get from these books? Or these videos are going to, you know, do something for you. And then you give us a little bit of, you know, how long typically does it take you to build that one content?
Not long. And so let me explain why. So when I first started writing threads, as we call them on Twitter, where you write a series of interconnected tweets, I said, I'm going to do this until I get good at it. And so I wrote a thread every day for about 75 days. So by the end of that, it became reasonably easy to write a thread. Like I knew the flow, I knew the system. And then what I do, EJ, is I go for a walk with my dog and I do a lot of the writing in my head. So I'm walking her and I write the hook and I file that away and I'm like, I love the hook. And that's where I spend most of my time, is the hook. And I'm like, yeah, that hook's going to bang. Like that is going to go viral. So I file the hook away and then I write the titles for the slides. I'm like, okay, I'm going to write it 10 things you need to do to become a millionaire. Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is the way I want to write the hook. These are 10 of the things I want people to focus on. Okay. Yeah. I can flesh those out. And then I get home and I put the hook. I put the 10 titles and then I just flesh it out. And I'm pretty good at typing. I type reasonably quickly. And I would say a lot of my writing comes from lived experience. So it's like, okay, well, this is like I'm writing from my life. So I'm just able to write it quick, right? And then the other thing you do over time is, let's say I write about habits. I've probably wrote 30 plus threads about habits. And so there might be 99 habits that I'm like, these are the 99 habits that really matter. At some point, I've written all 99 of them. And so if I'm writing a new thread, it's made up of pieces sometimes of old threads. So all I have to do is use the advanced search on Twitter and I could be like, hey, I know I wrote about owning your shit. Like if you type own your shit, and from I Am Clint Murphy, you'll probably find the exact same 3 type tweets 100 times because I've wrote about it in, it's so applicable to so many different things in life. If you want to be a better husband, own your shit. If you want to be a better dad, own your shit. If you want to be a better leader, own your shit. Like, hey, yes, I repurpose. And so you take the little pieces and you add them into a new configuration, put a new hook on it and send it out again. And so most of us that are creating at a high level, repurpose our old content roughly, I'd say you do it more when you're smaller and as you're growing. And then as you get larger, the time between repurposing grows until about 6 months. So if you look at my audience 6 months ago, it would have only been 200,000 people. And so that means there's 150,000 more people today that haven't read that post I wrote 6 months ago. So if I put it out, A, the 200,000 people forgot, and B, the 150,000 people have never seen it, right? And there's a young guy I know who writes almost the exact same YouTube thread about nameless YouTube accounts and how to make money doing it. And he writes almost the exact same thread 3 to 5 times a week. He goes reasonably viral every time he writes it. And the best part for him is when he puts a course on his timeline about how to build a nameless YouTube thread, everybody's going to know they should sign up, because this guy has made it clear in your mind that he's the nameless YouTube guy. Like, it's just like, I've seen you write that thread 100 times in the last 3 months. So I'm going to believe you when you put out a course. My biggest problem is because I don't actually repeat the same thing enough times. So if I were to go to launch a course, you wouldn't be like, oh, you're clearly the expert on that, because I talk about almost too broad of an array of things. So you're not going to say, well, you're that guy, because I'm not. I don't want to be too niche. I want to be wide, and then I'll figure it out. I'll figure out how that serves me later in life. And I don't think necessarily it's about selling a course or a product. Eventually that might be there. It's more about driving to the newsletter, driving to the podcast, and then figuring out the rest as we go.
Wow. Honestly, I could stay here all day just talking to you. You are just like, you're just flowing and flowing and flowing. And I like, okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, Clint. It's been a pleasure, you know, having you on and getting to know you on a deeper than what we see, you know, online and beyond the content, just knowing that, yes, you're the man. You're the man that gets shit done, and you're doing it. And you're killing it. Thank you so much for gracing the podcast today. I just wanted to leave one word for a young man. I think we need more men to stand up and just get shit done. So speak to one young man who would see this from any part of the world.
Yeah, the same thing I've been saying to my son since he was 8 or 9 years old, and now my youngest son saying it to him. You know, we talked earlier about know what you want, understand what it takes, do the work. And my oldest son boiled that down into vision, plan, do it. And it's that simple. For every young man out there, have a vision, create the plan, do the work.
Fantastic. If you want to go by an acronym, guys, VPD, okay? Vision, plan, do it. Fantastic. That's a very, very beautiful way to wrap this up. Thank you so much, Clint, for being here today. I really do appreciate you. And thank you for helping with the production of this in one way as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun.
I hope, guys, that you have learned a thing or two. I don't hope, I know that you have learned a lot, because I have. And I believe that if you do listen, you know, quite intently to this episode, there's a lot. If you're writing down anything, your notes should be full by now, because there's such a lot to learn from his experience. And I love that he shared from his experience. So, you know, okay, yeah, this is a person, and he's not just capping or branding to say, you know what, I get shit done. He really does get it done. And obviously, you know that if you need anyone to help you get stuff done, this is the coach to work with, all right? Thank you once again, Clint, for being here. And guys, till I come your way again next week, do remember to subscribe. Also, send me feedback. What jumped at you the most from Clint's story? What line did he drop that gave you like, boom, oh my God, I've not heard that before. What was it for you? Please send me a message. Drop it in the comment section of this video. Let us have that conversation. And please, I am going to leave all the links to Clint's content, to his newsletter. His newsletters are fire, okay? To his newsletter, to his X account, to his, do you want to be connected on LinkedIn? Do you accept sure. following on LinkedIn?
Sure. Yeah, right, I think so LinkedIn, in the next 2 years, LinkedIn will probably pass Twitter. It's going to be crazy.
Right? I know. Yeah. So we're there trying to, you know, set the foundation to wait for it to blow up. All right. So I'm going to leave all the links in the description of this podcast, both the audio and the video. So please do connect. I promise you, you are going to be mind blown. And literally his free stuff, like his free content is enough. Like these are content that people sell at a high price and he's just giving it out. I'm like, who is this guy? He's so good at what he does. And please, please, please do follow and get all the knowledge so I don't have to enjoy it alone. Okay. Thank you so much. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.